music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're so excited to welcome Kevin Stay to the show. Kevin is a singer, actor, director, and choreographer, and was a dancer for Madonna during her world-renowned Blonde Ambition tour, not to mention having a significant role in her Truth or Dare documentary. Kevin tells us about life with Madonna and about a new documentary being released called Strike a Pose, which catches up with the Blonde Ambition dancers and finds out how their lives have played out since their time with the Material Girl. We're also thrilled to welcome retro pop artist Graf, who hails from Toronto and is releasing her debut album called Lipstick Graffiti. We're looking forward to chatting with this next artist. He's danced with some of the biggest artists on the planet, including Prince, Rihanna, Lady Gaga, Celine Dion, Cher, Christina Aguilera, and Michael and Janet Jackson, not to mention his groundbreaking turn as one of Madonna's seven lead dancers during her Blonde Ambition World Tour and accompanying documentary Truth or Dare. Kevin Stay is here to talk about his illustrious career as well as a new documentary being released called Strike a Pose, which takes a look at Madonna's seven former dancers and what became of their lives after working with her. Kevin, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So can we start off, Kevin, by just talking about how you actually got into dance?
Oh my gosh, how did I get into dance? I fell into it. Actually, you know what? Janet Jackson is actually the one who inspired me to dance.
Yay, right?
So I came home from Singapore. I was going to school in Singapore. I came back to America and saw her video for Nasty on TV. It rocked my world. I really was like, oh my God, that's so hot. It's so cool. I actually recorded it on VHS tape and played it into a mirror and taught myself the whole routine.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I performed it at school in Singapore.
That is awesome. That is so cool.
It was totally out of nowhere, but it went over really well. From that moment on, I was like, oh, well, maybe there is something to this dance thing. And I started taking class when I got to college, to USC. And from there, I just sort of, I got a scholarship to go to a school outside of school while I had some free time. I wasn't doing anything. I was going to travel. I took a year off from school. And I ran out of money and realized, oh, all I've been doing is taking class. And what do I do? Or what can I do? What do I like doing? Well, I like to dance. So I heard there was an audition for an agent. I auditioned for her. She called me up. I signed the next day. I got an audition the following day and booked that and was working the next week.
Wow, that's awesome. And what was your first break where you feel like it took you to the next level for maybe that opportunity with Madonna?
Oh gosh. My next break, you know what really cinched it, I think, was doing, this Pepsi commercial with Vince Patterson.
Okay.
Like it was maybe 2 or 3 months before the tour. And I did this little commercial for Cheyenne, this Spanish artist, and with Lori and Robia, who eventually became Diamond and Pearl with Prince. And it wasn't that big a deal. It was a really short, little, small gig, but I just worked with him. And when Madonna brought in Vince Patterson as the choreographer after firing the original choreographer like a week and a half in, he kept me as the associate choreographer because he had just worked with me on Pepsi. So I think that was the gig that sort of nailed it in for me, because I wasn't hired as a dancer. I was hired as the associate choreographer and then became one of the dancers when she fired one of the dancers who was originally hired.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's like, I always find these interesting stories. Like I know, I'm sure you've heard of Kelly Kono, and apparently it was after Jennifer Lopez left that she got to dance with Janet. So I always think it's cool. I want to hear stories.
Yeah.
Like these.
There's so many backstories. Like, there's another Kevin. Like, if you look at the Vogue video, there's another dancer in there that never toured with us and never did anything with us. And his name is also Kevin, but I can't remember his last name. But when she saw us all working together, she liked my interactions with everyone better and the sort of diversity that I brought.
Wow. So can you talk to us about that first meeting with Madonna? Like where was it? In a dance studio? And what was your first impressions of her? Because by this point, she obviously already had huge success.
Well, let's see. My first sort of face-to-face was literally at the Cattle Call audition at Alley Cat in Los Angeles. And she was bringing everybody in groups of 40. There were maybe even 3,000 people down the street. And she was just sitting on the floor with her little glasses on and her little tights and bicycle hat and stuff. And we did this really super easy routine. And then she always chose like one or two people, maybe out of the 40, if anybody. and then cut everyone else. You say, thank you, everyone. Bye.
Wow.
It was harsh. So you had to be right up front to even get it, have a chance of getting seen. And that was my first time seeing her. She seemed like, she just seemed really down to earth. I mean, she wasn't like sitting at a table. She wasn't like, you know, whisked in with lights and bodyguards. She was just sitting on the floor with Nikki Harris, like right at the front of the mirror. And I really liked that. But I never thought of her at the time as being as famous as she was. I didn't realize how worldwide popular she was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after that, I think the next time I saw her was out at a club.
Nice.
She invited me to Club Louis, and to go dancing. I'm like, okay.
That's cool.
So at that point, I was just like, oh, hey, she's fun to hang out with.
Wow. That's awesome. And so how did it come about then that you, like, I know that you said that she enjoyed maybe what you were doing better than the other guy that was there. What was the process of the seven of you sort of coming together?
Let's see. Well, she had auditioned in New York previously to auditioning in Los Angeles, and she already knew that she was hiring Jose and Louis to choreograph her Vogue video. So they already had the gig, and she had brought Slam from New York. So there was fewer spaces available by the time she got to LA. But she did seem to go for just a nice variety of guys. Like, I don't know if that would ever happen again in this day and age. It seems like everyone's so concerned with this homogenous look and making sure that everybody sort of fits in together that I really enjoy the way that she sort of champions diversity and varying body types and varying heights. And it's not a concern that everyone's, you know, some buff superstar.
Right.
But yeah, we all met actually the first day in rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
I came in to work with the choreographer who I'd never even met before, and I was being her assistant. And I didn't even know what associate choreographer meant, or even what I was supposed to do as the associate choreographer. So I was just eyes open, ears open, trying to find out where's my place, who am I, in this group. And it was dramatic, everybody meeting, because there were such big personalities. My gosh, everyone was so like so bigger than life, that I had never seen anybody with such big personalities working on the same job together. Everyone in LA always just seems so calm and simple. And this is a lot already from the first couple of days even.
And yeah. How long did it take for you guys to sort of gel and gel with her?
With her, I kept my distance for a while because I at the time I wasn't very available anyways. I didn't really know myself very well or how to even make myself sort of like available to her. By the time I think we got to America after our first month in Japan, we were all really bonded as a family.
Okay.
Like, even just, you know, in the early days of rehearsal, I really wanted to know these New York guys and who they were and what they were about, because I'd never met anybody like that. They were just so over the top. And I used to go hang out at their hotel every night after rehearsal down in West LA, just to find out who they were and get a sense of what these people were like, especially since at the time I wasn't gay or straight or out or anything. I'd just been dating this girl and that they were like these big loud queens. And I was like, wait, is this what being gay is? I really was like asking that same question. I was like, is this what gay is? And am I gay? if this is what gay is, am I gay?
Wow. Can you talk to us about what she's like as a boss and sort of, you know, just being in rehearsal with her? Cause you know, I think we've heard these stories, not that she's a taskmaster, but that she's a taskmaster and she wants things done and she expects the best.
You know, Madonna expects people to work as hard as she does. And I completely agree. And that's why we never had any problems with that, because I worked just as hard as she does. And at the same time, I was still going to USC while I was working as associate choreographer. I was going to classes in the morning, assisting the choreographer in midday, teaching her steps and teaching the other guys their steps, and then going home and writing essays all night. So she was going off to music rehearsals and the boys were heading off to like go chill out and like, you know, hang out at their hotel, I was going off to write my essays and then go hang out with them at their hotel afterwards. So I think the thing is that she, as any good artist does, wants people to take their job seriously and do it well. And if you're a perfectionist, like I am, and she is, then you expect a lot. She might be a taskmaster in some people's views, but I think that's just paying attention to detail and doing your craft well.
Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is dancer, choreographer, singer, actor, and director Kevin Stay. You can learn more about him on his website, thatrogueromeo.com. Can you talk to us about what was your favorite part of the tour, and did you have a specific song that you just totally adored performing?
My favorite part, you mean a favorite part of the show or favorite part
yeah,
of the
Yeah, or just being like being out on the road, like any of that.
Well, I could be out on the road forever.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Honestly, I love touring. I think there's just something magical about waking up in a new city and traveling to a different country day after day and also doing it with people that you enjoy and love. If you're on tour, maybe with a group that you didn't like, that might be difficult. But I really grew to love everybody on the tour. And it was just the travel and adventure of the travel, unknown of what's happening day to day. That's what I loved most about touring. And I'm a bit spoiled by that. It's hard for me to imagine myself in any sort of standard situation, like a 9-to-5 where I have to go to the same place every day. Like for the rest of my life, I literally am looking around like, what's next? What's new? What can I do now? Like, the actual show itself, I think my favorite number was probably Keep It Together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I really loved the look, the vibe, the style. I liked the choreography. I also enjoyed that we were at the very end of the show, and so we knew exactly how much energy we had to give, how much we had left, because it was a very draining show. And also that we were very connected to each other. We got to look at each other. It was a very interactive number where we're running around being crazy, but we're watching each other, looking at each other in the eyes. We're having fun. We know the show is done. We know they've had a great time. Nothing has gone wrong. We get a chance to sort of say hi to everybody and say goodbye. It was just when it says, you know, the family affair, that really, it was sort of real for us, you know.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what the difference is dancing for Madonna versus dancing for Janet? Because obviously those are two high-profile pop stars, probably the biggest still on the planet. Was there a difference? Because I know, you know, I've had the opportunity to interview a bunch of Janet's dancers, and they always talk about what a family situation it was dancing with her, and I get that same vibe from you. But was there a difference dancing for the two of them?
Well, I think the family affair with Madonna sort of ended with us, honestly, which is sort of it's sort of sad. I think it's that, you know, there was a whole lawsuit that I sued Madonna over the movie, because she didn't pay us, and it was in our contract. It was purely contractual, and everyone made it into this huge gigantic deal. But I think that sort of made her a little gun shy to get really close to her dancers. And I apologize to every dancer set. But, you know, I think Madonna really wanted literally a family. And so we were sort of an extension of that sort of longing. She kind of, you know, projected that onto us. Janet, I always feel like she's more accessible. Like she's more accessible, like more, I can't speak with absolute knowledge, because I actually, when I did If, I was actually one of the Asian people of the video, not actually dancing on the stage with them.
Okay.
But from what I know, her demeanor and the way she treats her dancers, the way she is with everybody, she's very, like very accessible, completely accessible. Like she's one of us. Like she's a dancer, like first and foremost. And she doesn't really elevate herself like I think sometimes Madonna might. Madonna sort of, you know, in her moments, she has sort of, I guess, more deep a moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, whereas I feel like Janet feels very accessible.
Right. And that's interesting that you would say that, because like, I think that's almost like the across the board comments that I get from anyone that's worked with Janet, that she just treats everyone like they're part of her family, and she acts like one of them, and is happy to do that. So that's cool.
Exactly.
Can you talk to us about, because you mentioned, you know, the documentary, and of course I wanted to talk about Truth or Dare. Was it difficult having like the camera crew around, and did you know at the time that maybe things were going to get edited not the entire way that it should have been?
When we were being filmed?
Yeah.
You know, it was almost it was impossible to imagine what they were going to do with it. They filmed so, so much, and they kept being very clear as well with us, like, we don't know what's going to happen to it. So in the process of filming, it was initially there was a moment of like, oh, I should watch what I'm doing on film. I should pay attention. But when you're being filmed 24 hours a day for months, you sort of lose concept that there's even a camera there.
Okay.
Like there are so many times where I was realizing there's, gosh, there's not even like, oh, they're standing in the corner. I had no idea. And you know, at a certain point you have to give up the idea that you're going to have any sort of control or concept of what the final product will be. You can only just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely had that moment of like, okay, kind of whatever happens, happens. Yeah, it was, yeah, I, you know, at the time I didn't know the world had such huge, huge, strong opinions about everything that she did.
Right.
I didn't realize that. I was just having fun. It didn't seem odd or like out of place for me. But apparently for many, many, many people, it was this, you know, this moral tragedy, like that she was, you know, masturbating on stage and all this stuff. Like it just, for me, it was just sort of fun and, you know, devilishly kinky.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was going to be, you know, a scandal of some sort. I just didn't realize like how violently people really respond at that time to being confronted with sexuality and gay people and everything that she was, all the buttons that she was pushing.
Now, when you filed the lawsuit, just like you've explained before, it was purely about the contract. But when you saw the film for the first time, was there anything that sort of leaped out at you where you were like, oh no, like what's going to happen now? And I guess my part two question of that is, was Oliver really portrayed in the light that he should have been in that? Because like, obviously that was like a huge storyline, if you will.
Well, first, what's jumped out for me? You know, I really loved the movie. I was actually surprised and delighted when I saw it. You know, I knew instantly watching it that Gabriel would have a major issue with him and Flem kissing. And when he saw that, he asked immediately to have that taken out. For me, obviously I wasn't even involved in that. It didn't seem a big deal to me. But for him, he didn't want to be outed. And he didn't want to be sort of that. He didn't want that on camera, especially since his family didn't even know the crime. And his grandmother found out about him being gay by seeing that kiss on TV during like the promotions for the movie before we'd even seen the movie. And for me, the only one little thing stood out. And that was when she mentioned like, oh, I hired a bunch of, you know, emotionally damaged or almost, I can't remember what she said, emotionally crippled dancers or something. Whatever that phrase was, I was like, wait, how does she even know? She's never even asked my background. Like, she doesn't know me like that yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she knows my professional world, but I thought that was a very broad statement to say. So I didn't take it to heart as meaning myself, but it sort of became this, when you're declaring something in a movie like that, like it's truth, and it sort of lives on forever. And it's like, well, there it is. It's out there. I can't take it back now. So that sort of upset me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now I could care less. I could care less about any of it.
You and the other six dancers, you know, had a bond, obviously, like no one else, I think, especially because of being in such a spotlight and, again, having the Truth or Dare documentary come out. How were you approached to do the Strike a Pose documentary? And was it painful or enjoyable to sort of walk down memory lane with the other guys, especially because we know Gabriel's no longer with us?
Yeah, for Strike a Pose, this wonderful, wonderful, like truly amazing documentary team sought us out from Amsterdam, actually. They had, I guess, been throwing around this idea for about 5 years, where Ryer's Juan and Esther Gould, Ryer's a journalist in Amsterdam, and he sought out Esther, who's a documentary filmmaker, and told her the story that, like, you know, when he was growing up, it was this moment when he watched, saw the movie, it was this moment of realizing that it's okay to be gay, and it's, you know, you can be gay and normal or have fun and be successful. And it just sort of inspired him. And when he spoke to Esther, she had the same experience. And then they realized that in asking all of their friends and the people around them, that everybody had sort of had the same experience. So They sought us out one by one, just to check our interests, to see who we were, to see what sort of stories might be, like in what stories have happened with us over the course of all these years. Where did they go? You know, and immediately after speaking to them, I knew that their hearts were in the right places. It could have easily gone south, and could have, you know, the Strike a Pose could easily have been some sensationalist, crazy piece of something if it hadn't been for these wonderful, wonderful directors with their giant hearts and just like such a clear vision of what they wanted to say about our impact. As far as Gabriel, or as far as Oliver is concerned, I think he was shown pretty straightforward, dead on.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of him. I mean, that sort of crazy, jumpy, like, loud. But see, the thing is that what maybe you didn't get from the movie is that it's all so endearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like he's just crazy and like, oh my God, like, get him away from here. He's loud and crazy and fun and loves life so much that it's really endearing. And I spent a lot of time with him. Like, him and Gabriel were my hangout buddies the whole time. And even now he is jumpy and crazy and loud and just exactly the same, except now he's very aware of his love for us, whether we're straight or gay or whatever. Because he said back then he would have, you know, when he had never met gay people and he thought, you know, he wanted to punch us out.
Right.
You know, but now he's like, he's so huggy and lovey now. He actually kissed me on the lips the other day.
Breaking
I love
news.
You, Kevin. Mwah.
What has it been like, Kevin, to be with them again? Because I've been fortunate, like I've been doing lots of research, you know, to do this interview. And I've just seen all these pictures of you guys together again, obviously, you know, sadly missing Gabriel, but you guys look amazing. And you seem in the pictures genuinely happy to be with one another again.
Oh my God. It's been one of my life sort of miracles, I think, seeing them all again and realizing what a huge part of my life they are now and have been. Literally, we haven't seen each other for 20 something years, even though we're always talking about Madonna. Like, she's always in our lives. You see her everywhere. Everyone's always reminding us. Everybody's always talking about her. And yet we hadn't even seen each other in so many years that when we actually got all together, it was like this confirmation of family, like seeing brothers I hadn't seen in 20 years, like even closer than my brothers, probably. I've known these guys as long as I've known my actual brothers who were about that age. It's astonishing. I think, you know, at the time when we were on tour, we loved each other and we had a good time, but we were so young. It was a job. We didn't know it was going to be life-defining, career-defining. And to have the hindsight of all these years to sit back and say, wow, that was really a wonderful time. And what a special time that was for all of us. And really respect and understand and acknowledge the importance of all of that. We're just so full of gratitude for each other and love for each other that it's just a big love fest when we're together. We all go back to our same old 1990 dynamic,
mm-hmm.
in terms of how we relate to each other, but the love and respect we have for each other is just like multiplied like a hundredfold.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is dancer, choreographer, singer, actor, and director Kevin Stay, who also was featured exclusively and extensively in the Truth or Dare documentary and dance with Madonna on the Blonde Ambition Tour. Kevin, what do you want audience to take away from Strike a Pose?
I would love... Well, it's almost inescapable. You can't really walk away without seeing this, but I really want people to get our humanity. I think part of one of my sort of the drawbacks to Truth or Dare is that we were sort of almost silent characters. We were made into caricatures almost of ourselves. And even though a lot of it was real, it was a very specific viewpoint. And we were used to push buttons. And even though it was, you know, it's like a home video of our backstage, even though that's all real, it's like there is a backstage to the backstage. And I think Strike a Pose gives the opportunity to really see the humanity behind what you're seeing in the show. And what I would like people to take away is I guess the commonality of humanity. I didn't even give my own friends enough credit for the big giant heroes that they are. You know, I thought I knew these people, you know, and then I see the movie and I'm like, oh my God, these men that I've known my whole life are even bigger and better and more amazing than I ever thought, before. So yeah, I think give people dig further and give people a lot more credit than you might now.
What does it feel like, Kevin? I wanted to ask you this as well, because, you know, I've told you sort of through our email conversations, again, how much of a Janet fan I am. And you know, going back to sort of Rhythm Nation, all that stuff, it means so much to me because I was a kid at the time. And you know, it's sort of stayed with me through all these years. And I feel that way as well about sort of the Blonde Ambition Tour and Truth or Dare, because it was just at that time where it was very influential for me. So I'm assuming there's a lot of other people like me who were very much into music and videos at the time, and you know, it sort of stays with them now. What does it feel like when someone comes up to you and just tells you like how much they appreciate what you did, and maybe not even realizing at the time, you know, how much of an impact that you've had on people?
I gush and glow when people bring up work that I've done, because I think, you know, back in the day, there was no social media. There was no understanding of who you were reaching, who was seeing what you were doing. I was just going job to job to job to job and had no idea that so many people were seeing what I was doing. And when people come up to me now and say that I had an impact on my life, like, what else can you ask from life? Is to have your art and your creativity and your enjoyment, like, actually impact others. So for me, it becomes the reason actually why I continue. You know, if I had just kept going, you know, blindly, and there's a certain point I would have burned out, and I have it sometimes. But what brings me back in are literally people saying what an impact I've had on their lives, or what this job did for them, or what how they enjoyed this performance. It's like, oh, people are seeing what I'm doing. There is a reason why I'm creating or continuing to perform. So it does make a huge difference for me. I really. Something that's a big theme in my life. I really enjoy connecting with people, and impacting people, and just having that feedback just sort of gels it in for me.
When was the last time you actually spoke to Madonna, and what would you say to her today? Because I feel like this new experience that you've had with the guys again recently to sort of put this documentary together has obviously created, like, I don't even know what, like a new level of your relationship and with the other guys. So what would you want to say to Madonna, like, today if you could?
Let's see. Well, last time I saw her was maybe 2001. I think she thought I was Michael Gregory, who was the dancer on the Girly Show.
Okay.
I look back. I'm trying not. She was having dinner at a table next to me, because I was having dinner with David LaChapelle and Jamie King and Sharon Gold, like just all these people that she knew from completely different areas of her life, but she didn't even know we all knew each other.
Oh, wow.
We were all having dinner, and she was having dinner at a table next to us with Nas. And she gets up and walks over to our table and, like, stands there, like, right next to me, like, oh, my God, Madonna, hi. And I'm, like, holding her hand, and we're like, hugging and chatting. And then and she's like, okay, bye. And then I realized, wait, after when she left, I realized, wait, did she just think I was Michael Gregory? Because I feel like if she really realized it was me, I thought she'd probably have one of those moments of, like,
right.
Like, damn you. but for me, it was wonderful because I got the chance to, like, just show really there's absolutely no hard feelings. It's all love, you know. And if I had the chance to talk to her right now, I mean, first of all, I'd laugh because I'm such a different person than I was when I was 20. Like, I'm still, you know, I can go there pretty quickly and sort of fall back into that same pattern with her, but. God, I'm more outspoken. I'm bolder. I think I would just want to tell her that what a huge impact she had on my life, and that I really do love her, and I always have, and that I was serious about. I wrote her a letter before the lawsuit, and I reread it a while back, and I was like, oh, I was so much younger. I don't think I worded things the way I should have, and I felt like, God, those was a lot of misunderstandings. And I'd say I'm sorry, because I feel like there were some misunderstandings on both parties. And I feel like she may not have even understood that there was a clause in our contract for the movie. So at this point, I just feel like we need to let everything, you know, like go water under the bridge and move forward. I would just say I'm so happy to see her with a family also. It's beautiful to see her have kids and see the light in her face when she's talking about her kids or seeing her kids. And, you know, there's drama that comes with that as well, just like there was with her and us.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, it's been one of the most wonderful things to see her have the family that she always wanted.
And I have to ask you this before I let you go. I have two more questions I have to ask you. One, though, is because I have so many Janet fans that listen to the show, and again, long-term Janet fans, because obviously in the Truth or Dare documentary, there was a little Janet comment made, which I think a lot of Janet fans took the wrong way or were not happy with how Madonna sort of had thoughts towards Janet. And I asked this actually of Tina Landon a while ago when I did an interview with her, if there really was animosity between the two camps. I'm assuming not with dancers, but was there like a competitive thing going on between Madonna and Janet that you thought was palpable?
I'm going to have to phrase this very carefully.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm sorry to do this to you.
Oh, no. Don't be sorry. I'm like, I just have to make sure I phrase it the right way because of the lawsuit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that yes, that there was some serious, I don't even know that there was some serious animosity. I don't know what that was or why.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was one specific incident that was just, that I saw that I couldn't believe. So it cinched, I can't say it, but it really cinched it. I was like, wow, there's something really deep going on here that I'm not privy to. And it seemed like she's, you know, only does it to, I don't know if it's specifically to Janet, but yeah, it was definitely something odd, you know, and I know like she wouldn't, well, I don't think that she would hire Janet's dancers. And I don't think that Janet was hiring Madonna's dancers particularly.
Wow.
So it was also very sort of territorial, at that point.
Okay.
But I think it was more, it may have been possibly more from Madonna's side than Janet.
Okay. And actually, just speaking of those specific artists, and if I can even sort of lump in Paula Abdul at the time, because like right around that time, it just seemed like you were either in Madonna camp, Janet camp, or Paula camp. Like if you were like a fan or what have you. As a dancer for Madonna at the time, did you... It's almost like I feel like it was like three sports teams going at each other. Like, did you guys feel that as sort of part of the Madonna team, or were you sort of like buddies with everyone? Because I'm assuming you saw each other's at award shows and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the funny thing is, it felt very sort of competitive at the time, and I think that felt like it was more maybe from our side than like say Paula's. But like now, people cross over all the time. You go from one artist to the next. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe Taylor Swift and Katy Perry. Drama there. Apparently there's some drama there among bad blood. But back in the day, like it was a little bit more territorial, I think, also because we were so visible, like you had your people.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
But the thing is that over time, like, you know, Madonna moved on, I moved on, I worked with everybody else, and it just became, you know, it just became more like, oh, we're in this industry together.
Right. Was it hard for you, Kevin?
Territorialism disappeared.
Was it hard for you, Kevin, to get a job, though, sort of immediately following? Because it's almost like I feel like, you know, sometimes actors, after they do some sort of prolific movie, let's say like Twilight, right? Like for Pattinson,
yeah.
Like it's hard for him to go to something new right away. So was that like the same for you guys, like where it was hard to get cast or to be picked as dancers mm-hmm. for someone else?
Well, the thing is, right away after, immediately after I did Star Search, and then I started working with Michael Jackson, and then I was doing Newsies, the movie. So it was character stuff.
Okay.
You know, Star Search was my own stuff. I won Star Search. Woohoo!
That's awesome.
But then, like, Newsies was character in a movie, so I didn't really have to think about, you know, I'm so-and-so's dancer. But when I did go out for Michael Jackson's tour, they didn't hire me because of my visibility with Madonna.
Wow.
Yeah, so it did limit me in many ways.
Okay.
And for many years, I actually took it off my resume, especially after the lawsuit, because I didn't want people to keep telling me, you're just standing on her back and you're using her. I'm like, I am not using her at all. In fact, I don't even have her on my resume. I don't talk about her.
Right.
Like, if you look at the rest of my resume, that's like, it's like one little blip on my career. And so I don't mind talking about it, of course, you know, mm-hmm. that's one of the things I didn't mention before is that the Strike of Pose is this wonderful opportunity to actually talk about that era and that life and that world that I really didn't talk about at all, literally since the lawsuit.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's actually really nice to talk about all of this and revisit and remember and talk about it all with the boys and see their perspectives on it and learning about what actually happened in many ways, you know, that we didn't even know about. But yeah, moving on from Madonna was a mixed bag.
Okay.
Definitely a mixed bag.
Now, I could talk to you all day, but I don't want to do that to you. But I do want to ask you a final question. What is up next for you? And also, where can people see the Strike of Pose documentary?
Let's see. Well, what's next for me? I shot a documentary with my father 2 years ago, and I'm in the process of editing that right now. I am writing a memoir that I'm also quite a long ways in as well. And I have a music project called That Rogue Romeo. I released 2 albums. You can go find that all on thatrogueromeo.com. And I really enjoy that, and I want to continue doing some more work with that. So I'm working on new music for that.
Strike a Pose. Yeah. Where can people see Strike a Pose?
Strike a Pose is premiering in the U.S. at Tribeca Film Festival on April 15th. Strike a Pose will be filming, or Strike a Pose will be screening at Hot Docs in Toronto on April 29th.
Awesome.
And then I think there's a couple more showings after that. I'm not sure I can say any of the other dates because I don't think they've been announced, but there are many others. There are many other cities coming up for the festival, for festival dates. And I think that's all I'm allowed to say.
Okay. That's cool. Well, thank you so much for this. Honestly, it's been an honor to speak with you and to sort of hear what it was like back in the day and working with Madonna and all that sort of good stuff. And I'm so happy that you guys were able to do this, this new documentary so people can catch up with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is the multi-talented artist, Kevin Stay. Make sure to check him out on his website, thatrogueromeo.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Looking forward to chatting with our next guest. She hails from Toronto and combines many different styles of music, especially an 80s retro pop sensibility. And she's releasing her debut album called Lipstick Graffiti. Graf, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me. I really do appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
So I have to start off by clarifying this, because I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, Kelly, you didn't say her name right, Graf. But can you explain where that name came from? Because obviously not your given name, but your professional name.
Well, you did say it right. It is Graf.
Yay!
And it comes from when I first started recording with a group of friends. And I was really shy. My voice was thin and airy. And my friend David French said, you sound like spray paint coming out of a can. And that idea was just really cool. So he actually gifted me with the name Graffiti Tone, and I shortened it to Graf. And I kept the spelling with a PH because I preferred the look. But it is a nod to hip-hop culture and rap culture because that's where it came from. So I like to use that idea and that concept. But with the PH, the idea lends itself to so much.
Can you talk to us about how your music career began?
There's an artist by the name of Shocklair from Toronto. He's a rapper. Mm-hmm. And we actually went to school together. So he invited me to the studio to record. And that's how it started. I also kind of worked with Chaos from here as well. And we were in a band together for like 5 minutes. It didn't last too long, but we used to always work on music together. And I just kept writing and recording and becoming a part of different projects and finding my way until now.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe the sound that you produce now? Because obviously you've sort of mentioned that you come from a hip hop background. And then, you know, in the sound that I was listening to, the album, I was able to listen to several tracks. And so that you sort of have that 80s retro sound to you. Where do you describe yourself?
Well, yes, hip-hop kind of really confirmed my love for wanting to make music and become a musician. But I grew up in front of the television set watching video hits, which is like a Canadian, I don't know if you remember, mm-hmm. but it's like the Canadian music show and had all the hits of the 80s, and I was brainwashed by that. And I say brainwashed with absolute love and positive spin on that, because it stayed in my brain. So I added that into my songwriting, and I guess it's created the sound of now.
Cool.
Now, can you merging those two vibes together.
Can you give us an idea of let's say artists from the hip hop world that you feel have seeped into your music, as well as maybe some of those 80s artists?
Yeah, I love and adore a track called Quest. Mm-hmm. And recently Fife Dawg has just passed away. And, you know, it's a big deal because I'm inspired by the Native Tongues movement as a collective that A Tribe Called Quest is a part of. And so it's really influenced my rap style still to this day. And that they're my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love Wu-Tang Clan.
Very nice.
So those are probably my top there. In modern times, I do like Kanye.
Okay.
And there's a new kid, Marvel Alexander, that I liked. And I do like Odd Future as well, from the modern day age.
Okay, cool. Actually, the fact that you brought up Kanye, I wanted to get your opinion. You know, so many people feel like he's such an amazing artist and you know, producer-wise as well. Do you get annoyed that sometimes his personal thoughts, it seems to overshadow his talent?
I actually enjoyed the whole show of Kanye.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes. And I kind of, I'm sure that's his, he's being himself. But I also view that as part of the art and, you know, the whole circus of who he is. I enjoy it.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. Now, can you talk to us a little bit about, because I had read that you were a big fan of Tribe, and obviously with Fife passing away just in the last couple of weeks, what did that make you feel like? Because, like, I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan, and I can't imagine if she all of a sudden passed away, I'd be devastated.
Yeah, I did devastate. You're a huge Janet Jackson fan, which is really cool. The first thing is I just remembered all the songs and moments. I was my first Tribe Called Quest concert. I was 16 years old. I still have the ticket. I posted it on Instagram.
Nice.
And it's something that's very easy to lose, but I never lost that, because that's how important Tribe Called Quest is to me. I wouldn't be an artist if they didn't exist. And I loved Fife. He was actually my favorite member of the group. So
okay.
I was really hit by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his vibe is what's missing in rap right now.
Right. Yep. I would agree.
And I would love to see that reinvigorated, like people kind of coming up with styles that are a nod to him. That would be great to hear.
Awesome. Now, talk to us about the new album, Lipstick Graffiti. Is it a collection of songs? Is it thematic? What do you want fans and new fans to take from it?
The theme of the record is fun. I wanted the listener to really enjoy it, have fun listening to it, and also singing and rapping along with it. I was trying to achieve that, so I hope I did. The 80s vibe, I wanted to really bring back that songwriting aspect of it, having every vocal be energetic, you know.
And do you have a favorite song on the album? And I realize that's me like asking you to pick your favorite child, but I'm wondering if there's one that sort of stands out to you that's like, that's my jam and you won't mind singing that when you're 80 years old.
I like all the songs, to be honest, and it is hard to pick. But what I do think is special is the track called Animal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's so unique and so different. I wouldn't have imagined that I would have written something like that, but I ended up writing something that sounded that way. And it was a surprise to me, and I enjoyed the surprise.
Can you talk to us about some of the producers you worked with? Because I know that you worked with Hill Kukurtis, who I'm a huge fan of, and love the work that she does on her own with Hill and the Sky Heroes, and of course her work with Serena Ryder and so on. And then I read that you also worked with Chad Hugo from the Neptunes. What was that like?
Oh, it was great. The experience is wonderful. I got to go out to Virginia and work with him in his hometown and catch their whole vibe and actually learn a little bit about where they're from and see why they sound the way that they do, like the Neptunes and Chad, because Virginia is really kind of diverse and it gets into the music. So writing was really fun. He uses many styles and methods of creating, and that was great for me. Sometimes it's a jam, sometimes it's a co-production, just playing around and fiddling until we come up with something. Or sometimes I can just pick something off the laptop and I could sit with it for a moment. So the experience is really diverse in terms of being able to come up with ideas. It wasn't done just one way.
And would you ever want to, because like I'm really impressed that you actually brought up the Virginia Sound, because I'm a huge Missy Elliott fan. So,
woo!
Yeah, so she's my girl. I hope one day I get to interview her. And it does really feel like they have their own party going on down there, whether it's Pharrell and Chad or Timbaland and Missy. Does that sound influence you at all, like what Missy and Timbaland has done? And obviously Pharrell, he's all over the map.
Yeah, it made me comfortable to be different. You know, because everything that comes out of Virginia really does stand out. There's a uniqueness to it, whether it is Timberland or Missy or the Neptune's Camp. And it made me comfortable in my skin and to take chances and risks and mm-hmm. to play around with different sounds. And I know a lot of the Neptunes, they work with different people, like different genres, and to let me know that I could do the same thing. You know, I learned that from listening to those producers. The same thing with Timbaland, like working with the Hives, and She Wants Revenge. Like, you know, you can be very diverse in your career, and that's something that I want to achieve.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Toronto artist Graff. Make sure to follow her on Twitter at Lipstick Graff. Her new album, Lipstick Graffiti, coming out as well. Can you talk to us, I guess, about Toronto for a second and how that has either influenced you or not? Because I always am fascinated to know, you know, when an artist is from a certain city, if that city is kind of like the next member of the band or the silent member of the band.
Oh, definitely. I'm really inspired by the Toronto indie scene. I love Hill and the Sky Heroes, which, you know, you mentioned you know her as well and are a fan, and I'm a fan of her. So to work with her was great. I like Sate, who is a great artist out of Toronto right now, who's inspiring me. Love her shows and her music and her vocals. And I listen to Metric a lot. So they've influenced me. I love Feist and Broken Social Scene. Those are things that I've listened to all through the last couple of years. And I've definitely been excited and inspired by them.
Do you feel like you will be able to stay and sort of work out of Toronto? Because I know sometimes the flashy lights of you know, New York, L.A. or Nashville call to a lot of Canadian artists.
Yeah, and I do love getting out to the U.S. and working because it's a lot of fun. Each territory has its own language and slang and energy. And so does Canada as well, like Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto, very different. But yes, I think it's fun to work in Toronto now with Drake being around and bringing a lot of attention mm-hmm. to the scene. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people being noticed, like Bad Bad Not Good, Hail Kirkutis as well, myself. We don't have to feel like such an underdog right now when
okay.
we create, because people want to hear our sound. We've had some big successes in the last few years, so I think it's great for everyone who's working on music in this town.
Is social media important to you? Because I feel like in a way, obviously the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, it feels like this platform, whether you're on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and the list goes on, Snapchat, it's allowing indie artists to get known. Do you find it's like a silent partner for you as well?
Well, social media, that as an artist is, I'll admit, it's a battle for me because I like privacy, you know,
mm-hmm.
And don't want the whole world to know every single detail. A lot of artists are doing well with the social media because that's a part of the music and it's a part of like personal promo is a big part of becoming popular nowadays. But it is fun to exercise. It's a new way to exercise creativity as well, whether you are picking a quote to put up, whether you're personal statement,
mm-hmm.
Or whether you're choosing an image to represent your thoughts, that can be fun.
Now, before I let you go, what is up next for you? Well, obviously, the album's coming out. Are you going to do a lot of shows? Do you plan to tour across Canada and maybe even head overseas?
Yeah, I would definitely love to start playing towards the end of the year. I'm going to actually start rehearsals in a short little bit. And I hope everybody gets into this album and loves it and shows up to support it.
Fantastic. Graff, thank you so much for this. We really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
That is Toronto-based artist Graff. Again, make sure to follow her on her social media at Lipstick Graff. You got me crying like my mother, mother. Cause you like a cold summer that rains and thunders. Father, father, to disappear was quite a magic number. Left me behind and it left me troubled. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You was a man that was never there.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, as always, for spending time with us on the show this week. We always appreciate it. And a big thank you going out to our guests, Kevin Stay and Graff. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from APJ Abdul Kalam. Climbing to the top demands strength, whether it is to the top of Mount Everest or to the top of your career. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can do so by checking out our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and of course, our YouTube channel, which features our interviews, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.